You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Yes, it is. 7 o'clock. It's me. On this Monday night at 800-919-3776. In just a little bit, Michael Jordan and something we all seem to be forgetting, including Michael, during The Last Dance. And later in the show, is Mike Tyson really going to do this? And some very interesting stuff from Dr. Anthony Fauci and comments that he made to Peter King. But let's start with some baseball and the fact that we may not have baseball, not necessarily because of the coronavirus, but because these two sides, the owners and the players, are going to start bickering over money at the absolute worst time. Is that shocking? It is not. I mean, you look today and you have two sides presenting sides as if it was the middle of collective bargaining agreement negotiations. It's not. It's not. Scott Boras posturing at really an ideal time when the country is going to be approaching 20% unemployment. The owners making billions of dollars, taking a hit this year, no doubt, but their books aren't really fully open for anyone to know exactly how much they're making, and they're letting it be known, well, if you don't take less now, you're going to take a whole lot less later. Really? Are we going to have a shootout at the OK Corral over this in the middle of a pandemic, in the middle of millions of people in our country losing their jobs, and you two dopey sides can't get together on this? I mean, for Pete's sake. Now, look, I understand that there was a deal in place back in spring training as to how this was all going to play out. And that was 25% off the top for players taking a pay cut. Now, that was back at the end of March. That was in a time when we didn't know exactly how things were going to look. Can we all agree on this? If we have baseball this year, it's going to be without fans in the stands until at least the fall and possibly the postseason if it were to start in the middle of July. I think that's something that we can all get together and agree is a likelihood at this point, and that's only if we have baseball by then. So let's take it from the owner's side for a moment, okay? You have no fans coming into the stands for 80 games. Does that hurt? Of course it does. It doesn't knock your legs out from under you unless you're a particular few organizations like the New York Mets and like a few others that don't draw well to begin with and might actually save more money by not opening the gates and by just not playing a season at all. Well, MLB already got the draft reduced from 40 rounds to 5 rounds. And any undrafted free agent that they sign, in other words, anybody beyond that 5th round, caps out at $20,000 maximum of a signing bonus. So they are saving millions of dollars right there. They already got the contraction of minor league teams, although some are still to be determined which are going to actually be out, but they are going to save about $700,000 per year per team. Doesn't seem like a whole lot of money to put a whole lot of people out of work, but they're going to do that. Here's the issue. If the players turn down the deal, they're the ones who are going to be painted poorly publicly. And whether or not Scott Boras or Tony Clark or any other player right now, or Phil Hughes, as you just heard Don talking about a few minutes ago, wants to realize it, they're in a big no-win. How does the average fan look at this? Well, the average fan looks at millionaires with the players to whom they can assign dollar values based upon their contracts becoming public. And they look at owners who are paying exorbitant salaries and are not having any fans in the stands. And believe it or not, many times fans actually side with the billionaires over the millionaires. Why is that? Because of what I just said. You can accurately and definitively assign monetary values to players because we all know what their salaries are. They're all out there for us to know. We have no idea how much money comes in or goes out of an organization every year. What the gross amount of income is? No clue. You know why? Because they don't make that public. Yes, they open their books to a degree with the Major League Baseball Players Association, but when they want to assign the rest of the salary this year for players to a revenue split, in other words, all the money that comes in, the owners and the players split 50-50. The players are not trusting those numbers. They don't trust the owners to pay them the right amount. They can't get access to the full books. I hate to put it to the players this way, but it's just accurate. You're screwed. You're screwed this year. This is not over a long-term situation, okay? What are they all afraid of? They're all afraid that a salary cap is going to get put into place. They're all afraid that the money is going to get limited on how much they can make if they agree to do it this year. I think we can all understand one thing. This is a different year. This is a different time. And it may just call for an amendment to your CBA for a season. It may just call for everybody to do their part. And I know players don't want to hear that, especially the ones making the bigger amounts of money, but this is what's going on right now. You have to do your part, and the owners have to do their part. So there's got to be an agreement there in the middle where, say, everybody makes sure to make clear that this is for this season, has nothing to do with future negotiations, and that 50-50 split that Tony Clark says is a salary cap on the players, that goes away. There's no discussion of that sort of revenue split anytime in the future. But the players are the ones that are going to get completely hosed over here. Because that's number one. Publicly, everybody knows that so-and-so makes $8 million a year. But secondly, who makes up the majority of the players? The guys who are making less money, not the guys who are making $25 million. It's not quite like the NFL, but it's not far off from being the NFL. You look at any team's payroll, and majority of them are not making $10 million a year. The majority of them are not making $6 million a year. A lot of them are making whatever the veteran minimum is or the rookie minimum is. The rookie minimum or the minimum major league salary right now is $563,500. So they had already agreed to knock off 25% of that. Now that number's going to drop even lower. Are players really going to stand up and say, no, we're not going to take this right now? No, because all those players who are making the lower amounts of money, the players who are on their last legs making $1 million or $2 million, the guys who are, frankly, mid-range players at best, they're all going to agree to go play. Why? They need the money. This could very easily end up like the NFL CBA did. Why did that pass? It was very close, but why did it pass? Because the majority of the players in that league don't make very much money, and they need to get it while they can get it. And they could not afford to sit out an entire season and strike. Can the players, those guys that are down below in the bottom 25, 30, 40% of a team's payroll, even 50%, can they afford to not get paid for an entire year? My guess is the answer is no. So while you're keeping that in mind, the players are going to get painted a certain way because we can all assign dollar values to them, and they are all going to need the money. Look, there's no doubt everybody's taking a hit here, okay? But if either side is looking to gain sympathy, they're not going to gain sympathy. People are just going to get angrier at the players because they look at them as overpaid to begin with. They can't tell you how much the teams make. Assigning a dollar value to that would certainly help. And you could tell somebody what a team is worth, but it doesn't mean what they're making year to year. For instance, we know that it would probably be more beneficial for the Mets to not have a season at all than to play a season without fans in the stands. The players are just going to have to take it here. There's a few concessions that the owners can make, but in this instance, the players are going to have to end up getting as much close to equitable as they can and then just taking it. Because if you go out, you cannot put a dollar sign on what the PR hit will be if you decide not to show up. You can't. At this time in this country, if you do that, good luck. And all of the blame is going to be put on the players for not accepting the proposal. 800-919-3776. It's Carlin, 98.7 ESPN. We're going to hit the phones early. Open lines, get going. We'll hit them when we come back in just a little while. We'll get to the Michael Jordan stuff from The Last Dance episodes 7 and 8. And I've got some issues with episodes 7 and 8, which were not quite as revealing as I would have hoped, with one strong exception. Carlin, 98.7 ESPN. Oh, don't forget, later tonight, 9 o'clock, it's Beat the Fat Man. We'll also have Dave Lennon on from Newsday at 8 o'clock about all of this situation to try to get a clearer picture on what exactly is going to transpire here in the coming days.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
But can I just say a couple of things real quick about The Last Dance last night? Episodes 7 and 8 were supposed to be the ones that were really revealing regarding Michael Jordan. I got to tell you, I didn't find much of that. I didn't see anything that made me think differently about Michael Jordan. And he was talking about that in advance of this coming out, that he was worried that people would see him differently. All right, let's be clear. Michael Jordan approved everything that came out. There were a few instances last night where you saw him yelling at guys, but I didn't look at anything that I saw and think, this is brutally bad, which makes me think primarily, look, there were some things he said he shouldn't have said, but I've seen worse. I've definitively seen worse many times, which makes me think that really what was going on wasn't necessarily all in there. Now, listen, Michael has control over this, and that's the only way it got made, and this is not a journalistic thing. This is an entertainment thing, too. But in the instances where he acted like a jerk, okay, but he wanted to win. Well, I already knew that. And when he's talking about it at the end of Episode 7 and gets emotional and says, you want to play that way to win? Play that way. If you don't. And goes on a break. Okay. Michael Jordan's driven. That's not breaking news. I knew Michael Jordan was driven. Everything about Michael Jordan has been driven to be great and to be the best and to take other guys along and get the most out of them. there is something that bothers me about it. I don't believe that enough is being made of just how good Scottie Pippen was and how good Dennis Rodman was. Joel Pollack and I were talking before the show, and as he put it brilliantly, it's, hey, they were the big three before the big three. They're pretty close to it. It was just that Rodman did something else besides score that was at an elite level above everybody else in the league, and that was rebound and defend. And Pippen was a top three player in the league. So it's not like Michael was dragging along everybody else. I do think it gets a little bit lost. Michael Jordan did win these championships, not just because of his incredible drive and doing it on his own. He won these three championships because he was the best player to ever play the game, yes, but he also had a top three player at the time in the league, and a guy who was the best rebounder and defender in the league at the time. And I think that probably doesn't get enough play. In other words, are those guys getting the proper amount of love that they should? I felt like Pippen was earlier, not as much in these couple. And that shouldn't be forgotten at all. Two other things that were very revealing to me, and frankly, one that I had forgotten about and one that was shocking. Scottie Pippen says he'd do the same thing over again. He's sitting out after Phil called the play for Tony Kukoc against the Knicks? Really? After all of that that they went through in the middle of it, Scottie's saying that, I'd probably still do it the same way again. What? That just makes me think that in that very moment, Scottie Pippen was thinking, this would never happen if Jordan was here. He's right, it wouldn't, but Scottie forgot he wasn't Jordan. He's an unbelievable player and the leader of the Bulls, and they obviously had an incredible season. But as much as he's saying that in his head, that's hubris that's getting to him in the moment. Yet somehow later on, he still feels the same way. It doesn't speak great of his mentality there. And then the other thing was, admittedly, I had forgotten how much the end of the, or the beginning of the strike really affected Jordan not playing baseball anymore. I do believe that he would have continued to do it. And I do believe that at some point he would have been in the major leagues, but I'm not sure that he would have been in the major leagues because he was going to be a helpful player on a team. He had good speed. He was obviously stealing a lot of bases. I agree with them. When you drive in 50 runs and you hit 200 in the minor leagues, people don't understand that at Double A, that's where the top prospects end up. You know, that's not right away, but that's where the cream of the crop starts to separate itself. In AAA, you have two groups of players. You have the players who think that they are being screwed because they've been to the major leagues and should be back there and are complaining about being there every last second because they feel like they're major leaguers, they've been there before, they're veterans, all that. And they're getting screwed because this guy's getting preferential treatment or whatever. And then you have the guys who are on the way up who are getting screwed in their minds because they feel like they should be in the big leagues already. Nobody's happy in AAA. In AA, the fact that Jordan was able to do that was pretty remarkable. I mean, to be able to hit at that level. I mean, I broadcast minor league games and in short season A-ball for 3 years. And what those guys do was incredibly difficult. So what Jordan was doing was impressive. Let's not make him out to be, you know, the next, you know, hitting behind Albert Bell in the White Sox lineup. I don't know that he would have been doing that. But what he was doing was pretty impressive. Spike in Jersey, up next. Spike, what's going on?
Hey, my friend. First of all, hope you had a wonderful Mother's Day.
And all good. Unfortunately, could not talk to my mother, but that's, you know, okay. one of those things. She knows how I feel.
She knows you love you. Yeah. All right, good. I got that out of the way. A couple of quick things here. First of all, Triple H, has-beens and wannabes. It's just like, you know.
And going to bees as well, but everybody's...
But not many. Some of them jump from double A right to the... Anyway, I want to get off. I want to get back to the Jordan thing. Jordan constructed this thing in a way, and the editing of this thing is just magnificent. It's just magnificent. I was at almost all those games, even the ones in Chicago, because I traveled a lot in those years. He ate my kishkas up. He just ruined me inside. I couldn't eat for days, something, not literally, but he just took the heart out of a Knicks fan. A little bit of an argument with you on Pippen. Not an argument, the discussion. Rodman probably was the best rebounder I ever saw. He followed the flight of the ball brilliantly. And
Pippen was also an excellent defender, too. I shouldn't leave that out. He was great defender.
Pippen, if they reran the top 50, he wouldn't be in it today, in my eyes. Pippen was a very good defender, a great open floor player, average shooter, average mid-range shooter. What always bothered me about him, lifetime 70% free throw shooter. I'd put him on the line all the time. I didn't like that he didn't go back in that game. He's done stuff like that before.
That was dumb on his part. But at the time, Spike, my point would be, at the time, Pippen was a top three player in the game.
But you don't want him taking the last shot or getting fouled when you need 2 points. But then, be it as it may, here's my beef with Pippen. It always was my beef with him. Sometimes he said things, I was aghast when he said he'd do it again. Like everybody else, your mouth is wide open. What? It's almost as if Jordan caught that. I mean, it was put back in and he let it in. It was like a mistake. You just don't say things like that.
When I heard that, I almost thought, did Jason Hare screw him over here and is actually answering another question? And he just completely put it in out of context? Did he really just say he'd do it again?
Who was the great ventriloquist that you grew
Charlie
up with?
McCarthy?
Charlie McCarthy and Edgar Bergen. Well, Edgar Bergen was on radio. Ventriloquist on a radio. I mean, please. Yeah. Put him on TV and his lips move. I forgot the guy's name, but there's a couple of them that were brilliant that we saw. It just slips my mind out.
That's the only one.
It could have been a ventriloquist. I couldn't believe that. Listen, Pippen was made so much better because of Jordan. Jordan was driven as much as anybody I ever saw. Some of it was for a fact. The thing with Scottie Pippen.
I get that, Spike. I just think Pippen, and thanks for the call, I think Pippen was absolutely and still an underrated player. He's a tremendous player and a top three player at the time. And if Jordan doesn't have Pippen and they don't have Rodman, they don't win. They don't win. Or the cast they had the first time around. They don't win. Jordan, it's not taking away from Jordan's greatness because we say the same thing about LeBron. LeBron didn't win a championship without, you know, unbelievable players. And he was playing in a much easier era to play. Except, I mean, you could argue Cleveland, but still was pretty good with Kyrie Irving.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Good evening to our host, Joel Pollack.
Good evening, Chris.
How are we doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm looking forward to another delightful round of Beat the Fat Man.
Spirited, I would hope for.
Of course.
Spirited.
That's what we always want.
Yes. Off of my 2-0 Friday night, I have improved to 10-3 on the season, which I, am I pleased about that? It should be, frankly, it should be better.
But the winning percentage is high.
The winning percentage is at 769 for those keeping score. So I'm winning better than three quarters of the time, but that's not enough. Like Michael Jordan, I am driven to be the best. And I will humiliate all those who stand in my way, and I will take any little comment as a slight. So let's find out what we're working with tonight for our potential contenders. Jamal in the Bronx. Hello, Jamal.
What's going on, Carlin? How you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
I can't complain, man. Just trying to do my job and make sure we continue to help the people of this great city and state. And move the state forward, man. We're going to get.
What do you do, Jamal?
I am a New York State Senator, actually.
Really?
Yes, sir. 36th Senatorial District, the North Bronx and Mount Vernon.
A politician ready to take me on. You sure you want to come on here and get humiliated?
Well, listen, you know, listen, Carlin, you know, you're more popular than me. You know, I'm only going to get more respect on my name because of you. So, you know, why not, man?
All right, Jamal, you watch a lot of television? I don't know if you want to answer that question right now.
Oh, listen, well, you know, in a former life, I was once surgically attached to a TV. So, you know, why not?
All right. Hang on, Jamal. Let's see if you get a shot here. How about George in Brooklyn? Hi, George.
Hey, how you doing, Carlin? How's everything?
I'm good. You know your stuff?
You know, I'm better with older television, but you know what? Hey, why not give it a shot?
Well, this dates back to the 80s and forward. Is that what you mean, or are you talking about F Troop?
That's not bad. Larry Storch.
Well, it's not a terrible show, but it's not what we're focusing on.
Right, but 80s is fun.
All right, hang on, George. Frank in Manhattan. Hello, Frank.
Yes, sir.
How are you?
I'm well. Yourself?
Good. You know your stuff, Frank?
I sure do. I was raised by television.
Really? How old are you, Frank?
I'm 50 years old.
50 years old. Right smack in the middle of the demographic. We like to hear that, Frank. Please hold. Don in Sussex County, New Jersey, I believe. Hello, Don.
Good evening, sir. How are you?
Good. Where are you in Sparta? Where are you?
As a matter of fact, I am right in Sparta right now.
Outstanding. Be careful. That cell reception up there isn't great. Do you know your television trivia, Don?
Well, Chris, my wife says that that's our hobby. I think we need some other hobbies, but yeah, she says that's our hobby, so I think so.
Okay, hang on.
And I am old.
Hang on, Don. I want to quickly talk to Dave from Edison because Dave was our guinea pig when we took our first crack, our trial run at Beat the Fat Man. Dave, I appreciate you calling in. I think it's still a little too soon.
Okay, that's fine.
So we'll give you a chance in a couple of weeks. How you doing? You good?
Good. I'll tell you what, though. I feel confident. Remember when Jordan got on the plane to Phoenix for game 6, he said he was only taking one suit?
Right.
That's how I feel.
That's how you feel. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, we will get you in soon. Try us again next week.
Next week? Okay, you're on.
All right.
Okay, Chris. Bye.
All right. So, Joel Pollack, I think I'm leaning toward Jamal. I think it would be fun to take out a politician on the air. Your thoughts?
I think so, too, but I'd be biased because I'm in that Bronx area. So we're but we're going to go with Jamal because
he's your choice. Is he your state senator?
I'm Riverdale, so I'm not quite sure, and that's kind of embarrassing that okay. I don't know who my senator is.
That's all right. I hate to say it. A lot of us don't, but that's unfortunate. Right. Jamal, do you cover, is your district Riverdale or no?
No, that would be my good friend Alessandro Biaggi. That's your state senator.
All right.
So now you know.
Now I know. The more
Well,
I
Jamal,
know.
We're going to give you a crack. Let's see if you know your stuff. All right. Hit the music. Sometimes you wanna go where everybody knows your name.
They're calling again.
Is your brain rotting with useless TV knowledge? Do you want to put your quarantine brain to goodish use? It's time to play Beat the Fat Man.
Yes, it is. Once again, I remind you that I am 10-3 on this young season thus far. And we are just about ready to take on Jamal from the Bronx, a state senator here in New York. Joel Pollack, explain the rules.
Okay, here's how the game is going to work. I'm going to present each of you with three questions, one each from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s television. Whoever gets the most questions right is our winner. Now, if the score is tied after three rounds, we're going to go to overtime, where the first one of you guys to win a round is going to be declared our winner. Now, our contestant's going to get the question first, and during that time, we're putting Chris in isolation, so he's not going to be able to hear the question until we're finished with Jamal.
Jamal, you understand the rules?
Yes, sir.
Are you ready?
I am ready.
All right. Joe Pollack, into the isolation booth I go.
All right, Jamal, you got me?
Yes, sir.
This 80s detective show featured a cool detective named James Sonny Crockett, who solved crimes but never got a hair out of place. What was the name of that show?
Oh, Miami Vice.
That is correct.
All right, you got one. Hi, Chris, you're back.
Mm-hmm.
This 80s detective show featured a cool detective named James Sonny Crockett, who solved crimes but never got a hair out of place. What was the name of that show?
That would be Miami Vice.
And Jamal got that right as well. It's 1-1.
That's exceptionally easy for a first question, but that's fine. That's fine. We want to let Jamal get his feet wet and feel good about himself. Because we all know that politicians need to be patted on the back. Question two.
To the booth you go. All right, Jamal, from the 90s. In the 90s show Seinfeld, what does Frank Costanza yell out as an anger management technique whenever he's stressed?
Oh, Frank Costanza, also known as Jerry Stiller. It's not festival for the rest of us. Oh, man. I'm gonna have to say I don't know.
Ah,
man.
Ooh, sorry. All right, we'll bring Chris in and see if he can get it. Hiya, Chris.
Hello.
In the 90s TV show Seinfeld, what does Frank Costanza yell out as an anger management technique whenever he's stressed?
Serenity now!
Serenity now! Serenity now!
The great Jerry Stiller. Rest in peace.
Rest in peace. Jamal did not get that right. It is 2-1. Chris.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy, indeed.
Question three.
To the booth. All right, Jamal, and from the 2000s, on the hit TV show The Big Bang Theory, how old was Sheldon Cooper when he received his PhD?
He was young. I know that. I want to say 11.
Ooh, the answer is 16, but sorry, you're not going to win. But we're going to see if Chris knows the answer to that one. Hiya, Chris.
Hi.
On the hit TV show The Big Bang Theory, how old was Sheldon Cooper when he received his PhD?
He was 12 years old.
The answer is 16, but Jamal did not get that right. So, Chris, you're our winner.
After graduating college when he was 12. Well, Jamal, you won an election, but you lost when it counted.
Oh, man, listen, I had a hell of a lot of fun. I enjoy this segment every Monday and Friday. And, look, I just want to say thanks to you and to all the other hosts on the station who continue to it's a trying time out there for a lot of people, if not everybody. And, shows like this continue to bring levity and light to us. I just want to say thank you for the job that you do, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thank you for your hard work as serving the public, Jamal. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care.
Thank you. You too. It's like I didn't get a chance to humiliate him more because he's actually, doing something. I guess I got to respect that these days, Joel.
I know, right? It takes the fun out of it.
I should have known 16 with Sheldon. I should have known that.
We look at right. W's, though. It's all
it's
about the
W. That's what we're doing. We're cranking up W's. We're putting them up on the board, 11-3. And we will look to go to 12-3 in moments against either George, Frank, or Don. Boys, sit tight. We'll determine it. Round two. When we come back.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
On which contestant we feel like we should head to next?
Frank felt awfully confident.
Let's talk to Frank again real quick. Hello, Frank.
Yes, sir.
You know your stuff?
I sure do.
You're 50 years old, you said?
Yes, sir.
Joel?
I think let's do it.
He exudes confidence.
Right? Let's go with it.
Good.
You always say you want competition. You want it to go to overtime. This is your guy.
Well, no, I want to embarrass everybody, but, even Jordan, while it wasn't in the finals, he's been to a few Game 7s. All right, Frank. You get your shot.
All right. Let's do it.
All right, let's jump right into it. I'm going to throw Chris right in the isolation booth, and we're going to get right into this.
Sit tight.
All right, Frank, here's your first question. From 80s television, Knott's Landing was a spinoff of what show?
Oh, boy. Dallas.
That is correct.
That's right. It is Dallas. Let's bring Chris in and see if he's got it. Hiya, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Knott's Landing was a spinoff of what TV show?
That would be Dallas.
Oh.
Frank had to think about it for a second. I think he's a little upset how quickly you got it.
Did he get it right?
He did indeed. It's 1-1.
Upset about how long it took me to think about how quickly I got it.
Yeah, he had to think about it for a second.
Okay.
All right, back to the booth you go. All right, Frank, let's see that confidence in action. 90s, in the TV show Friends, what color is Ross's favorite shirt?
Purple.
I would have accepted salmon or pink.
Oh.
I know, sorry. Let's bring Chris back in. Hiya, buddy.
Hi.
In the 90s TV show Friends, what color is Ross's favorite shirt?
Oh.
Gotta give me something.
Is it salmon?
That is correct.
Oh, no.
That's right. I told Frank that we would have accepted pink or salmon, as both were referenced in the show.
Yeah.
So there we go. It is now 2-1. Chris.
Oh, Frank didn't get it right.
No, he did not.
Ah.
He said purple. Close, yeah, but no cigar.
No, I see. Here's the thing. I was going to say pink because I knew it was either pink or salmon, but then I thought, I think he said salmon. So there you go. This is what you're up against, Frank. Godspeed.
I'm in trouble.
Question three.
And here we go to the booth. All right, Frank, here we go. Who played Arthur Spooner's father in the hit sitcom King of Queens?
Arthur Spooner. Arthur was Kevin's father.
That's right. And who played Arthur's father? Correct. Who played it?
Oh.
Gotta give me something.
I don't know.
Fair enough. It's going to be a loss, but let's see if Chris gets it first before we let him know. All right, Chris, from the 2000s. Who played Arthur Spooner's father in the hit sitcom King of Queens?
Who played Arthur Spooner's father? I think Jerry Stiller did. Jerry Stiller.
Jerry Stiller was Arthur Spooner. His father was played in an episode by his son, Ben Stiller.
Okay. All right. See, I was thinking of when Arthur was a little boy, and so I thought that Jerry Stiller also, well, never mind, I got it wrong.
But, Frank got it wrong as well. So, Chris, you win again.
Well, Frank, you really brought no enjoyment to that win for me.
I'm sorry.
It's one thing to beat a state senator, but then I get a confident. See, here's what we're learning, Frank. People talk, and it doesn't mean much. Unless it's
no,
me.
It doesn't. Yeah, that's true.
Oh, Frank. Very true. Have I ruined your self-esteem for the evening?
No, none in the least.
How do you exactly plan to face your wife again after this?
She's listening right now, so I'm not quite sure. I'm going to have to figure that one out.
Yeah, yeah. My guess is, Frank's wife, if you are listening, you're going to sleep tonight with a loser. Did I say that? Did that just happen? Oh, Frank, you're a good sport. Thanks for playing.
Oh, good man. Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Pleasure was mine in beating you. I'm a little disappointed that, I mean, I should have guessed Ben Stiller, but I was thinking of an episode where he wanted lemon ices. And he wanted, I wasn't even thinking of that one. You know, he had a heart attack at one point because of Doug Heffernan. And, you know, Doug felt bad about it, was trying to get him some lemon ices. I saw that up. I've seen them all. What am I talking about? I've seen them all.
But there's so many episodes. It's easy for something like that, which happened in one episode, to get all lost.
Like, here's a tough question, okay? What was the name of Carrie's sister that, like, four episodes in was written out of the show?
That's
Sarah.
That's a good one. That's
Sarah. One. Sarah is her name. Sarah. She had a sister on the show, and like five episodes in, she was gone, just mysteriously. And she had been living with them, same with Arthur, because his house burned down.
That happened in another 90s show as well. It happened on a 90s Fox show that was on for about 8 years that also had another character in the first season that just mysteriously was never heard from again. Donna Pinciotti's sister in that 70s show was also just never to be heard from.
I did not watch that 70s show very much. I should have watched that more. I know bits and pieces about it, but yeah, that's a good call. And other people who were written out of it, like Parks and Rec had that incredibly boring character. The guy, he was so boring, I can't even remember his name, who was there for like two seasons and then was gone. And then the show, you know, got better. You remember what his name was? You know who I'm talking about?
I do. I'm trying to remember his name.
This is a problem that
Paul
none
Schneider
of us can remember
is
his
the,
name.
Is the actor? The actor is Paul Schneider.
Okay.
And I forget his name. He was. He worked in the office. He's the politician. Dated on and off. Almost dated on and off again.
No. Wasn't a politician. No. He was like a city planner or something
right.
like that.
Right. He worked in the
office. Yes, and he kind of half dated Leslie Knope. Anyway, yes. Point being is this: I'm 12-3. I'm on a bit of a winning streak at the moment, and you people continue to disappoint me in what you bring to the table. So we have a few days for you to study up and try another exercise in futility on Friday night when we play our next round of Beat the Fat Man. Joel Pollack, any thoughts on anything that needs to be altered? Do you feel like things are going smoothly with the show?
I think we're really starting to get it, you know, into rhythm right now. We had no complaints about the questions tonight, which was great. You know, every single night we've had maybe one question that either you didn't
saying
like
I'm a
wording.
Whiner?
I'm saying that we're out to get you. And you had no complaints tonight.
Yes. Okay.
So I think we're doing really well.
I am absolutely crushed about Jerry Stiller passing away. And listen, he's 92, but just brilliant timing. Brilliant timing. And I watched something on the internet today that was Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Jason Alexander did an Instagram Live last week where they were talking about that scene. Somebody had asked him about the scene where she was starting to pick a fight with Frank Costanza and how she just couldn't keep it together. And if you remember, they did like the blooper reel at the end of that episode, and it was hysterical. Frank Costanza looking at her saying, "You saying you want a piece of me?" It's tremendous.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.